fracaso.
Tremendo fracaso.
Doble fracaso. Tremendo. Doble fracaso.
Cada que suceden este tipo de fracasos.
Un tremendo fracaso para el fútbol mexicano.
El resultado de ayer, con justa razón, se ha calificado como fracaso.
¡Esto es un asqueroso fracaso! ¡Un asqueroso fracaso!
Welcome, Hercules Gomez, joined by Mauricio Pedrosa. You're not going to believe it, but fracaso means failure. And on the heels of one of the biggest failures in Mexican history, Mexican footballing history, I should say, Sebastián Salazar decides not to show up for work. I don't know what to make of it, but I'm lucky enough to be joined by Mauricio Pedrosa. Mau, please help me. Help me understand what is going on.
I am not afraid. I'm here to represent exactly what Sebastián Salazar didn't want. Exactly what Sebastián Salazar is avoiding right now. Yes. I'm not running away from any criticism. I don't know. Do our colleagues label this as a fracaso or not? It was. I don't know if it was not clear with the clip that we just saw.
They may have mentioned it once.
Wow. Well, we'll talk about that. We have obviously a great show for everyone, but let's get things started with what happened at San Pedro Sula. Mexico playing Guatemala, a spot at the next Under 20 World Cup, and also at the next Olympics on the line. This is minute number 10. Good chance for Mexico, but Esteban Lozano with his attempt going wide. And right after that, it looks like Mexico was in control of the game, but Guatemala, Herc, they played a very, very solid match. 39 minutes, and there it is. Arquímedes Ordóñez, 1-0 for Guatemala.
Arquímedes Ordóñez, what a name, right? Néstor Cabrera with a nice, give him the dance. 1-0.
53rd minute. That's another good chance for Mexico. The shot by Fidel Ambriz, but Esteban Lozano blocks the shot, but then 73rd minute, Mexico finally finds the back of the net. Look at the celebration. Game tied.
Yeah, it's Lozano off his back, shoulder, whatever you want. Mismo Lozano, the same Lozano, and the penalty kick in the 9 minutes, in the 88th minute.
Oh, that was it.
No, Moreno.
That was the ticket for the World Cup penalty kicks, and it was all Guatemala's goalkeeper. What an exhibition. He saved 4 PKs in total, and what do you think? Guatemala with a shocker. This is the penalty kicks, and look at the Guatemala goalkeeper, man. He was awesome all night long.
Moreno was very good. Give Guatemala credit. We're going to talk a lot about Mexico, but what Guatemala has done after losing, 5-1 in the opening game to eliminate Canada, eliminate Mexico. Unbelievable, but you look here. The story is the elimination of El Tri.
But you see the ups and downs. Third time missing on the World Cup since year 2000, but in between, the Mexican national team actually won 2 medals, gold in 2012 in London, and most recently in 2020, the bronze medal in Tokyo. But most importantly, we'll miss first U20 World Cup in a long, long time. So I think we have to start dissecting what this truly means. It is obviously a big, big fracaso, but how big of a deal is this for Mexican soccer?
It's a huge fracaso. It's a massive deal. This is the worst footballing moment in Mexico's history. Now, let me just...
That's a big statement.
Let me just, for a second, give you some context. Let's go back to September of last year. That's when it starts. You lose Campeones Cup to Cruz Azul. I'm sorry, Cruz Azul to Columbus. Okay? Then you play the CONCACAF Nations League final in Denver against the U.S. men's national team. You lose that game, in a game that you were winning. You then go on in that same summer, I think it was 60 days, I believe, and you play against the U.S. men's national team in the Gold Cup final. And what they played, a C team against your A team, you lose that. World Cup qualifying, you don't win a single game versus the U.S. or Canada. Well, that's just that. Well, Liga MX versus MLS All-Stars, you lose that as well. But it's an All-Star game. What does that matter? I'm showing you a trend right now. CONCACAF Champions League final, the Seattle Sounders. the first team, Major League Soccer team, that's going to go to a Club World Cup because Pumas couldn't beat them. So Mexican soccer is now showing us this. And then here you are. But everything that we've been hearing, because you and I hear it all the time with our colleagues down in Mexico, is, yeah, but look at the U.S. When you guys get a medal, you guys don't even go to the Olympic Games. We're so good in youth national team tournaments. And they are. They're powerhouses in it. But now you're not in the U-20, and now you don't have Olympic Games. This is the cherry on top of what is already an abysmal year. That's why it's a huge fracaso, because you're adding so much into this.
Yeah, we'll touch a little bit later on the show on the magnitude of this and this trend that you are speaking of, and how you very, very well presented that. But I'm going to go and try to present the argument of why this is actually one of the biggest, biggest fracasos in Mexican soccer history. You are going to miss on a full generation of players who won't have the chance to compete at the top level when we talk about national teams under 20 and the Olympics. And when you consider this, most of these players are 18-year-old, 19-year-old, even 20-year-old, not 20, but 18 and 19-year-olds who in 4 years, some of them maybe were going to have a shot at playing for the senior national team in the 2026 World Cup.
That's the plan, right?
Now, they won't have the possibility of competing at underage level, under 20, Olympics. So that's why this is a massive failure. We can go deep into, is this a talented squad or not? Does this team have a lot of good players or not? I think this is a reflection on how poorly the executives of the Mexican National Federation have handled in the last few years, 3-4 years, not only the Mexican national team at the senior level, but now when we thought the underage level were very solid, very good teams, now we can see it's not the case.
Yeah, a lot of that was masking maybe some of the things we're going to present in a little while, right? You knew that these problems existed, but the fact that Mexico, whether it was at the senior national team level or their youth national teams, would dominate CONCACAF, it would mask over or paper over some of those cracks. No longer the case. Now, I know what some people are going to say, like, maybe we're being a little too harsh here. This did happen to be the first time they were scored on in this tournament. Yeah. It was the first goal they gave up.
They had scored 19.
They hadn't conceded in four games. Then this happens. But these peculiar circumstances where, because you don't make it onto the next round, you're automatically out of not only the World Cup, the U-20 World Cup, but you're out of the Olympics. So they're peculiar circumstances, yes, but it forces Mexican soccer to confront the actual issues.
Now, what kind of experience are you as a national team going to give to these players, right? Because that's a big part of their development. Now, let me ask you this, because you played against Mexican national teams. Do you believe teams like this look other teams like Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador?
I know what you're getting at.
They look down on them.
Not that they look down. They just don't take them as seriously. And this is a reflection of maybe they didn't take them as seriously. But credit to Guatemala and what they did. It was not an easy feat by any means. And they pulled it out. So you have to give credit, but you also have to signal what went wrong.
Yeah, a lot of fingers now are pointing at Liga MX. And Liga MX president Mikel Arriola was introducing an agreement with the Italian Soccer Federation. And he was actually, this is before the game, by the way, he was bragging about how well Mexico handles their youth system. Let's take a listen.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Lo que queremos comunicarle a Europa es que México es uno de los mejores formadores de jugadoras y jugadores profesionales, porque la sub-17 femenil la tienen menos de 5 países, ¿no? Y queremos apoyar a los jóvenes para que sus procesos pues terminen en México, pero también terminen en Europa.
Should Mikel Arriola, Liga MX president, should he get lost with that statement? I just hope they didn't watch the game together. All Don De Luisa, the Italian executive, and Mikel Arriola. I pray that they didn't watch the game together.
It looks like he's got egg on his face, right? It's not a good look for Mikel Arriola. I get it. Now, I'm a little conflicted here whether get lost, but I'm going to go with get lost. Not because of what Mexico couldn't do against Guatemala, but because he's confusing winning with developing. And that is a big difference. Now, Mexico wins. Mexico has won at the U17 level multiple times. World champions. They've won. They've gotten very far and competed at the U20 level. They've won at the U23 level. Level, which is an Olympic medal. You can win, and they do win. CONCACAF, they always win. That doesn't mean you develop players, because when you develop players, that means these players that are winning, when they go on to play with actual grown men, they can continue to develop their careers and have long and fruitful careers. We're seeing a trend in Mexican football where these players, 17, 18, 19, 20, those are the lost years for them, and that is it for them in Mexican football. So he's confusing winning with development right there.
So here's why I believe he should get lost. I asked someone in Liga MX, what's this deal with the Italian Soccer Federation? And what they're trying to do, what Liga MX is trying to do, is bringing more eyeballs, European scouts, to Mexico's youth system so that they can probably become more interested in acquiring Mexican players at a younger age. Why? Because now there's an admission of guilt by Mikel Arriola. Liga MX now is not developing younger players. And there's a trend with bigger teams like Rayados de Monterrey, Tigres, America, Cruz Azul. When was the last time that we thought, look what a great job they're doing with their youth system, with their academies? I know America won the under-20 tournament in Mexico recently. How many of those players have had a shot at the first team?
Yeah.
So they are admitting Liga MX is now a problem in terms of developing the younger talent.
And people need to realize how much or how dependent the Mexican footballer, domestic footballer, is on Liga MX. I'll give you a quick example if we compare it to the American player, to the U.S. men's national team eligible player. In Mexico, they're so dependent on Liga MX to form and export their players. But that's not the case for the U.S. men's national team player, because you can go to Europe from Major League Soccer, to USL, which is an independent league, second division, from college, so the university level. There are academies. Barcelona has an academy here. City has an academy program here that you can go to from as well. There are players here who hold double passports, so they have these dual passport, dual nats. Mexican players don't really have that. They're very limited to that. So there's just different avenues of getting to Europe, of sharpening iron with the best that Mexican players don't have. They're completely dependent on Mexican football. So when you have a certain amount of foreigners or the foreign product, and you limit these players and you put a ceiling on how far they can get, well, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's seldom that a good Mexican team in first division actually wins with the youth system, with the younger talent. We're staying with the under-20 CONCACAF qualifiers. On Tuesday, the U.S. men's national team beat Costa Rica. A brace by Paxton Aronson. Yes, that's Brandon's brother. Do you see any similarities between the two brothers, Herc?
Mr. Football Americas and Mr. Mini Football Americas. They get in the box and they do their thing well. Look at that. It's a good little sweet little finish with the left foot.
So 2-0 the victory for the U.S. men's national team. This is now the second half, and another good finish inside the five.
Yeah, that's what you can do if you are pisando
a little outside,
stepping
five.
Inside the box. You say it's inside the five.
I thought it was inside. It's a little bit outside. Now, at the end of the game, ugly scenes and suspensions have been handed by CONCACAF after this altercation. Kate Cowell suspended 3 matches for this incident. It got ugly, Herc. 2 Costa Rica players have been suspended 6 games. 7 Costa Rican players have been suspended for 3 matches.
Kate Cowell got caught up in the mix. I know you're frustrated. You saw one of your teammates get kicked, but you're an important player. You're going to miss 3 matches, a very important game coming up with a lot on the line. It's a learning moment for him.
Yeah, ugly scenes at CONCACAF level. You don't want to see this. Now, Olympic qualifications since 2000, 2 for the U.S. national team, 5 for Honduras, and they're going to go head-to-head again.
It's always Honduras. Hey, Cal, why?
our production shirt to stat that it's very, very rare to see both Mexico and the U.S. men's national team playing at the same Olympics. It hasn't happened since 1992, and it's not going to happen again.
92 or 82?
92, Barcelona. Yeah.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's move on. United States men's national team and former Manchester City goalkeeper Zach Steffen is expected to join Middlesbrough on a loan deal through the 22-23 season, sources confirmed to ESPN. Zach Steffen spent the last couple of seasons being the backup for Ederson at Manchester City. Now he's looking to become a regular starter, and he's moving from the Premier League to the Championship to play with Middlesbrough. So, Herc, that's exactly the question. Are you cool with it? Zach Steffen now playing in the Championship.
I am cool with it, but I will state with an asterisk. Like any other footballing World Cup cycle, any other U.S. men's national team, and I wouldn't be cool with it because I'd be saying, why are you leaving a team like City? Wouldn't this jeopardize your chances if you leave City to a team that's in the Championship? But Greg Berhalter has shown you that that doesn't matter. I mean, he's literally been at City, and he's given a player who's in Major League Soccer, the chance to be the number one. So that's out the window. And it shows me how much he cares about actually wanting to be the number one at the World Cup, because you're giving up, quite frankly, an advancement in your career.
Yep.
You're giving up, quite frankly, the Premier League titles and the gunning or running for Champions League titles. That is City. You're giving up a very promising place to prove that you want to be the number one come World Cup time. So I applaud the move. I will have to say we have to recognize something. Zach Steffen, you have Matt Turner.
Yep.
And you're going to have also... the name is escaping right now. The goal
at Fulham.
Horvath.
Horvath.
Thank you, sir. Ethan Horvath. We're all going to be. He'll be probably the only starting goalkeeper, and the other one will be backup. So we have to acknowledge how limited the goalkeeper pool is now in the U.S. men's national team setup. For the first time in a long time, you may have had uncertainty of who was going to start, but it was Casey Keller or Brad Friedel, and you were good either way. And then it was Tim Howard, and you were set. For the first time, you're seeing a very weakened pool in what was historically the best position in a U.S. men's national team pool.
I'm absolutely 100% cool with it. I actually give Zach Steffen a lot of credit. I mean, it takes a lot to give up a spot at Manchester City. It's not easy to get there. And once you're
there, that's a destination.
Exactly. You're going to try your hardest to stay there. But let's not forget one thing. He went through a couple of bad mistakes, and the atmosphere probably wasn't the best. His relationship with the fans maybe wasn't the best. If he was not even comfortable being a part of the squad, if this could be a fresh start for him, then I think it's 100% the right decision. And I say that not only aiming at being the starter at the World Cup. This might be his chance at proving himself also in English football. Maybe this is the chance he was needing to become a regular starter at Middlesbrough. And if things go well, maybe there's another team. I'm not going to say Manchester City, but maybe it's Manchester United. You know, maybe it's, I don't know. Maybe it's Wolves. Maybe it's...
You know what, Mal?
You name it.
This is betting on yourself. Because you're saying, I'm taking a step back and level the
Which
club.
Is why I'm giving him a lot of credit.
I'm taking a step back and level in what is the club situation. But I'm betting on myself that I could be a number one here and win my position in the World Cup. And come World Cup time, that's going to open up a lot of doors for me if I can prove myself and I could do well. So he's betting on himself. I applaud that, though it is risky.
Yeah, and it's obviously risky, but I think
I'm talking about his actual career.
Of course, but I think right now for him is the right move. Now, reports out of London are suggesting that Chelsea would explore the possibility of trading Christian Pulisic and some cash in exchange for Juventus defender Matthias De Ligt. Chelsea are also looking to add another attacking player with Leeds' Rafinha and City's Raheem Sterling leading the way. Main candidates. So, Herc, would Juve be his best option? Would that be a great landing spot for Christian Pulisic if this trade actually goes down?
His best option? I'm not sure. A great landing spot? Absolutely. And I think we're all under the same conclusion that he needs to leave Chelsea. He needs to go. Rafinha is there. We keep hearing different things about Raheem Sterling. We've seen Neymar's name in the mix.
Yeah.
If all this
transpires, longer shot, but still in the mix.
Christian Pulisic needs to go. It's already a souring relationship. Forget about Thomas Tuchel. Maybe some of that fan base and where they place blame. And now you're going to go to a team like Juventus, which is a historic team, a very good team, but it's in an absolute need of a facelift. Chiesa is probably the only winger right now, out and out. Cuadrado's playing as a back, and you look at guys like Bernardeschi on their way out. Di Maria has been an option to come in. This is a player that can come into this team, a very good team that will have Champions League and Serie A actual aspirations, and he'll get to play in a World Cup year. It makes all the sense in the world for me. I absolutely love this. It reunites him for the time being with Weston McKennie, a childhood friend, a U.S. men's national team teammate, in a place where Weston already knows, where he'll come in, he'll get to play, he'll feel wanted, he'll feel happy, heading into a World Cup in a World Cup year. It makes all the sense for me. Serie A is a very good league if you can do this. It just looks on paper, has the makings of a happy marriage, which is something that we've not seen or said about Christian Pulisic with his club situation in quite some time.
And he also has to understand one thing. The people that actually worked on his deal from Borussia Dortmund to Chelsea are no longer part of the team. Everybody left. Once the team changed owners, and I know it is an American owner, but he's delegating and he's bringing his own people. Everybody left. And only Thomas Tuchel is now in charge as the lone, he's not executive, he's the manager, he's the coach, but he was part of the last year when we thought Christian Pulisic had very good games. He was a starter for a stretch of like 10 games or so, and we thought this was maybe the time where he was going to be able to prove that he belonged there. But as things stand right now, once you start hearing that a team is looking for an attacker, they got it. Now they're looking for another one, and they're looking for another one. Then maybe it's time to leave. Now, I wanted to ask you this, because we obviously are going to focus on minutes before the World Cup. Christian Pulisic is going to be the number one name on Greg Berhalter's list, right? He's not fighting for a spot, but you want to be in rhythm. You want to be sharp. So how much do you take that in consideration if you're going to make a move to another team?
I think you have to. I mean, it's not just Christian Pulisic. His teammate, ex-teammate at Chelsea, actually made a jump.
Lukaku.
And we're talking about multiple times, $100 million man. It goes to show you how important playing, being sharp, heading to a World Cup year is for these players. Feeling valued, feeling confident. There's something to be said about when you're happy. When you're happy in your situation, off the field, it translates on the field. Now, his life off the field at Chelsea may be great, but when you're in that bubble and it's got very little to do with you actually playing, and what I mean by that is you've already got this prejudice against you. Mm. You've already got this judgment made by certain people. He missed this one. He's going to miss it again. And that gets in your head. It's time to leave.
So if he actually moves to Juventus and he plays in Serie A, is that more of a physical league than the Premier League? And how do you think his style will fit in Serie A?
No, I don't think it's a physical league compared to the Premier League at all. It's going to be an older league, a much more mature league for him. So if we're talking
tougher league?
Tactically, defensively,
that, yeah.
Maybe. Yes, because it's defensively very world-renowned. But I actually think it suits him. You look at his speed of play, how vertical he can be, how good of a 1v1 player he is. I think there are a few leagues in the world that don't suit Christian Pulisic. But Serie A is that league I think he can do some damage in for sure.
Another American player changing kits for the upcoming European season is Jordan Pifok. He's set to join Union Berlin. Pifok was the Swiss league's top scorer. 22 goals with Young Boys. Is this his best next step, Herc?
I don't know what his options were, so it's tough to say best next step. I will tell you this. We've heard Greg Berhalter say, I don't want, and we're referring to these young players,
yeah,
you know, leaving for Europe, or these young players making the next step.
I want to see them dominate where they are first. Well, he just dominated the Swiss League, you know? He's Golden Boot. So now he's going to place in FC Union Berlin, that is an Europa League team. So he's going to a place where he's going to be valued, where he's going to be used. It's a step up. They were 1 point off the Champions League race off of Leipzig, a very good Leipzig team towards the end. So it shows you the step up in a very technical, a very good tactical league. And I'll tell you what, if he is scoring goals in the Bundesliga, there is no way Greg Berhalter keeps him off the list.
Absolutely. That to me is key, 100%. If he's going to be a regular goal scorer, I mean, actually, if he's going to be a regular starter, right? That's the first question. We will touch on Ricardo Pepi's topic in just a moment. But to me, that is the big question for Jordan Pifok. Are you going to be a starter? Are you going to have enough minutes to prove yourself? He's not going to score 22 goals in the Bundesliga next season, right? Anything can happen, right? If you dream it, anything is possible. But if you're able to become a regular player, Europa League and Union Berlin was the surprise of the season last year at the Bundesliga.
Listen, great fans behind him.
Okay? 100%.
He's going to be in a place where he's valued.
Yeah.
He's going to be in a team that, honestly, offensively, they're very decent, the upper half. It's a good, balanced team. You're going to play Europa League. You're going to have the Pokal as well. You're going to get chances to get on the field and put the ball in the back of the net. Now it's up to him. But if you could put the ball in the back of the net, all these haters, all these naysayers, all these critics who said he missed the goal in Azteca, that's gonna evaporate. That's going to go away, and you got a chance at a World Cup.
Right. Still, number nine, a great topic of conversation every time I talk to you guys. Hey, I don't know. Who's in bigger trouble, the U.S. men's national team or the Mexican national team when it comes to the number nine? Speaking of Ricardo Pepi, it finally happened. He scored. Run it back on Football Americas. This is Ricardo Pepi's first goal with Augsburg. Is the first warm-up match for his club before the Bundesliga starts. Very nice tap in, and it's good to see him back in the score sheet.
Okay, it's not a Bundesliga team he scored against. Okay, it's a preseason game.
It's actually another Augsburg team, by the way.
I don't care. Goals are important for any nine. This is how you get your mind right. This is how you get your feet back underneath you.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, MLS action during the week, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start with the good. What a game. What a first half. These happened. Cincinnati hosting New York City, and Cincinnati was taking a commanding 3-0 lead. Herc, I switched channels after the third goal. I thought the game was over, and oh my God, was I wrong.
Lucho Acosta with the first goal, assist on the second goal. That's Brenner. We got a Brenner sighting. Yes, that Brenner. Is he done? No. No, he's not. Look at this. Look at Brenner.
Nice. Does this count as a bicycle kick or not?
Overhead kick.
Overhead kick.
Is this a, could be, maybe, I don't know. Production may surprise us. Top 10 goal of the week nominee. Mm. But we got a game 3-0, at least for, uh-oh. No.
Yeah, that's a PK. And we all thought, okay, we might have a comeback, but Maxi Morales, not so fast, my friend.
So you're telling me Maxi Morales actually missed this?
Yes. Yes.
We're still
down three scores. Look at the clock. 45th minute. Somehow, Magnus scores. It's 3-1. We're all gonna go to the locker room, right, and take a risk. No. Half is not over. And here's Heber.
Let me tell you something about Eber. People are sleeping on Eber. He tore his ACL a few seasons ago, and people are sleeping on him. Do not sleep on Eber. Look, that's number two on Eber. I told you not to sleep.
And
now we're at 3-3.
He scored again. It's 3-0. 52nd minute. The comeback. Wow, now New York is leading the game. What a score by Pereira.
Pereira solo, solo, yo Pereira solo. He's by himself and he wants to step up.
70th minute, Brenner at it again. Hat trick for him, and it's 4-4. Fun stat, by the way, fun fact, seven goals scored by Brasileños. But it's not over. Before the end of the game, Cincinnati for the win. Yes!
Uh-oh.
But we have to go and take a look at the VAR. Brenner with a poker. But not so fast. Goal disallowed. Close call, by the way. Close call.
The second one. He's in an offside position. Ridiculous save by Sean Johnson in the first effort. Still 4-4 game. This is nuts. MLS
Madness.
After dark. Whatever you want to add into it. But I loved it.
This is the bad. Jalen Russell, he got traded from Toronto FC to Columbus Crew. And what do you know? First time he plays for Columbus, he faces Toronto. And what does he do? He hands two assists. Only in the first half.
Yeah, Jason Russell Rowe was actually the MLS Pro Next Player of the Year, or Player of the Year, Player of the Month of May, signs a contract with the first team. What did he do? Oh, my ex-team, let me just hurt you with two assists in the first half. I'll tell you what, TFC is struggling.
Yeah. How's my boy Carlos Salcedo doing, by the way? Not so good. Not so good. Well, if you trade me, this is what happens. I'm going to hand it back right away. And the ugly, Jose Martinez. He already had an incident before this match, but he seems to have, again, flipped off the fans. And it's not the only thing that he would do. He was sent off in the 72nd minute, second yellow. There's the first ugly gesture, but it's not over. And then he's mooning the fans. What is he doing, Herc?
I have no idea. That's why we blurred it. What is that about? Like,
hey, at least he kept his undies on.
He got suspended last week. Now he's doing it again this week. Wow, that was crazy.
Epic goal or epic fail? LAFC hosting Dallas. Jesus Ferreira. It looks like it's a fantastic goal, but is it a nice goal or a bad mistake by Maxime Crepeau?
So it's so bad, I nominated this as one is the loneliest number. Maxime Crepeau, it's bad. Tries to take a step anticipating the cross and eats this one completamente. Like, this should never happen to a goalkeeper. You got to keep this.
That's the key. The key is the first step.
Yeah.
If you at home are watching this, and if you want to make up your mind, if the goalkeeper takes a step forward and then he tries to pedal back, and it's a golden mistake. LAFC introduced Giorgio Chiellini on Wednesday at the Banc of California Stadium. Yes, he's 37 years old, but he says he's in great shape. He says he has watched a lot of Major League Soccer games. He knows a lot about his team, his teammates. There's the introduction, and then Giorgio Chiellini had time to address the media and his new fans.
It's normal. We have just three designated players and the forward. But I read on the US the forwards, the attack sell tickets, the defense win the league. Then I and then this is my goal and my target.
Well, that's right. He's not a designated player, right? He won't make all of those millions, but
Sure he doesn't need them.
Should he get lost? Attackers sell tickets, defenders win the league.
No, he shouldn't get lost. Look, there are a few sporting cliches that are actually true. This is one of them. You know, defense wins championships is what he's trying to say, and that's the truth. Historically speaking, in this league and in many other leagues, a sound defensive team, a very stingy team, will do well in a playoff format, will do well when it comes final time. I've got zero issue with this. I think he was actually very charismatic.
Yeah,
I was very surprised by the level of his English. He's a very charismatic individual. He seems to already be embracing everything that is Los Angeles. They got a good one, and they got a good one on the cheap. And I say that with the utmost respect. This was a great piece of business.
So I like the shift on philosophies for LAFC. 4 years into the league, what seemed to be their strategy, scouting in South America, right? Getting younger players, some of them for a hefty price, some of them not for so much for a hefty price, were able to do good business with them. But it seems like they were lacking some star power, right? Other than Carlos Vela, of course. But after the last two seasons of what we saw with Carlos Vela, who was going to be that star for LAFC? That's why I love the move so much. How much do you think he can impact on the field with his current team, which, by the way, LAFC, best team in Major League Soccer so far.
Tough to say. I mean, he's physically fit. I think he'll be a good force next to Murillo. I think that'll be a very dynamic duo. And I say dynamic in the sense that it's going to be very difficult to get past him. But it's a player that's not proven to stay healthy or to play full seasons. And this is a very physically demanding league. We called a game not too long ago. It was a 12 o'clock game. It was 12 o'clock, sun beating down on you. Red Bull had a lot of trouble with it. I'm sure Giorgio Chiellini's not going to be fond of it. But if he's physically fit, I've got no doubt he will be a welcomed addition for LAFC.
Yeah, there's questions. Where is the team going to feel his impact more, right? On the field or off the field? Yeah. As a leader, as someone who has been there before on tough situations, who's a consummate winner, right? That impact in the locker room, also a big part of why LAFC put their sight on Giorgio Chiellini.
Without a doubt. And it sounds dumb thinking this is a long-term relationship with Giorgio Chiellini, because you're just like, well, he's probably not going to be here next year or 18 months from now. But it's what he can continue to nurture and develop within the club with some of those players, maybe take some of those guys like fall under his wing, a 19-year-old center back. I mean, what a luxury for some of those guys.
One extra DP spot for LAFC. You talk about defense winning championships. Goalkeeper, still a question mark for LAFC, and it has been a question mark every season. Do you use that last DP spot on a world-class goalkeeper?
It's my camera here.
That's your camera, right?
If you're a GM and you use a DP on a goalkeeper, resign.
Why?
Resign.
Why?
Hand in your credentials.
Why?
Because you're in a salary cap league, and that's just handcuffing yourself even further. There are so many other places you can use an actual player of importance. No.
Goalkeepers can win trophies, too.
Yeah, they could also lose them.
Well, I mean, of course they can lose them, but yeah, I'm not going to repeat what my producer
just... Do not repeat what it...
Just told me. I just don't think that's a crazy idea. You're set on the rest of the field, right? You have your forwards. Fine. You have a solid midfield. Good. You already have a very strong back line. Why are you not at least consider using that DP spot for a world-class goalkeeper?
You can use him anywhere else. You could use him in the midfield. You could use it as a defensive midfielder. You could use it as another nine. You could use whatever you want. Bring another superstar. Don't waste it on a goalkeeper.
All right. You can catch LAFC this weekend on ESPN+. They're visiting Vancouver Whitecaps on Saturday. We start at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on ESPN+. Drama, drama, drama in the Open Cup. Last match of the quarterfinals. Orlando Dam 1-0. Mighty fourth minute. And they find the net, the equalizer. Hurt Rodrigo Schlegel with a save by Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's 1-0.
Schlegel's a cult hero. You remember those penalty kicks where the field player comes in? That was him. That was him.
All right, then we're going to PKs.
Oh, no, look at that. It's a good finish.
Facundo Torres with a nice finish.
He's been a good addition.
Yeah. And this is Eric Miller. El Peruano Galese with the save. And Orlando City with a lot of drama, man. Yeah, coming off of the World Cup qualifiers, also another hard PK. And Orlando will play Red Bulls Sacramento Republic after beating the LA Galaxy. They're going to play Sporting Kansas City, both games on July 27. When you take a look at the bracket, who you got? Who's winning it all?
I'll take Orlando City. And I know the producer was surprised by this. I mean, when I look at...
Look at the talent.
You got Pereira, you got Torres. Facundo Torres has been good. Cara, you got Juan, the right back. Galese, you have Pato as well. Maybe starting or coming off the bench. You've got a decent team. And you got Oscar Pareja, the head coach. And Oscar Pareja has won the Open Cup before. And Oscar Pareja has actually taken this Orlando City team to a final. Let's not forget, not too long ago, MLS's back tournament. They made it to the final. So they've got a penchant for knowing how to play these type of tournament settings. And I look at the field. They have home field advantage if they want. I mean, throughout they could host the Open Cup final as well. They happen to be undefeated at home in Orlando. So I'm going to stick with Orlando right here, especially when looking at the field. So it's just an easy choice for me.
So I think whoever comes out of the top of the bracket, right, which is Red Bulls and Orlando, I think that team is going to win the cup. But I think I'm going to go Red Bulls. I think that's a very solid squad. When they have a full squad, a healthy squad, they're tough to beat. They're very, very tough to beat. It's going to be a very even, a very close game. I don't see any clear favorite between them two. And we pretty much are giving no chance to either Sporting Kansas City or Sacramento.
Well, I wouldn't say no chance. I mean,
you just said for you it's very clear that Orlando is a favorite.
Well, they have home field throughout, but I'm not saying no chance. If you look at a team like Sporting Kansas City, the producers, what about Sporting Kansas City? They're supposed to be a very good team in the Open Cup. They are, but this is still a team that's without Gary Kenda, without Alan Pulido. Those are two DPs. They're very Jekyll and Hyde. They leak in goals constantly. They have trouble scoring goals. They're very dependent on Johnny Russell and what a player like Daniel Shalloway could do. So, you know, and do I say a team like Sacramento Republic is completely out of it? No. I mean, hosting a game at home, it's a very special thing for any fan base, especially a fan base, a second division USL fan base. That's for them. This is the biggest game they're ever going to play, that they're ever going to see in front of them with their club team. So I don't say, hey, there's no chance there.
No, they're the Cinderella story by any means. But if you are a neutral fan, right, do you want Sacramento to make it all the way to the final?
Of course.
Or would you rather see two MLS teams facing off each other for the
cup? I'd rather see Sacramento make it to the final. I think that would be an enormous notch on the belt for American soccer in general. We see these type of things all over the world. We see it happen in the FA Cup, and people say it's the magic of the FA Cup. While all of a sudden, if it happens here, do we have to make less of it?
Both teams, we're going to watch both games on ESPN Plus. That's on July 27th, on Wednesday, July 27th, starting with Orlando City hosting Red Bulls at the game starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, followed by Sacramento Republic, Sporting Kansas City, 10:30 p.m. approximately Eastern time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, also here on ESPN Plus. The U.S. women's national team playing again against Colombia, this time at Rio Tinto Stadium in Salt Lake City. Great story during the game. This is Carson Pickett. On Tuesday, she became the first person with a limb difference to appear for the U.S. women's national soccer team. And the game started right for the American Sofia Huerta, forcing an own goal by Manuela Venegas. This was on the 22nd minute.
Hey, Sofia Huerta does a very good job of sending a ball, and she can whip in a great cross. She's proven it at NWSL level. She's doing it again here, forces the own goal.
And then after a delay due to lightning, 77th minute, Kaylee O'Hara, first time scoring since 2016 for the U.S. women's national team.
Oh, look at this. Get on the end of it. We can give it to the right back. And look at nice little finish. Just strokes it very nicely right there. Not too strong. Very good technique. Look at the bend bending right back in.
2-0, the victory for the U.S. women's national team. Here's the schedule for the CONCACAF W Championship starting on Monday, July 4th, playing against Haiti and then Jamaica. Tournament will be played in Monterrey, Mexico. They're playing actually host Mexico on July 11th.
Vladka, let's take a minute to look ahead to the CONCACAF W Championship. Let's talk about where it is first, because I think for a lot of people, it's going to be their first chance seeing what the buzz around women's soccer in Mexico has become. What do you think about this tournament being held in Monterrey, and what kind of crowds do you expect?
I'm actually excited. I'm excited because I think that this group needs something different. You know, they've only played in this country in front of their own crowd. We were just now in Denver, almost 20,000 people there, full stadium. Everybody's chanting their name. They're cheering them up. And in some ways, it's cool and easy. But now we gotta go where just as many fans, or not double that, are cheering against them or for the opponent. I think that's important for this group to see, to experience, because that may be the case if we hopefully qualify for the World Cup, where we're going to have to play in front of 30, 40,000 people that they're going to cheer against us. And we got to figure out a way. We got to find a way to grind through those games, to grind results out, to play against the opponent, against the fans, against the environment. So it is an exciting moment and exciting tournament.
I know when you're thinking of hostile environments, you think about the USA-Mexico potential game there in the group phase. What do you expect from this Mexico team? It's got a lot of players in the league that's up and coming, but maybe a lot of players that at least American fans don't know about. It seems like a program that has kind of hit its rock bottom and now is on the way up. What do you make of Mexico?
I think that they're going to turn heads if they qualify for the World Cup, which I think they're great. Great team, and we can see that there has been a systematic improvement. It wasn't a team that was just a group of players just thrown together. It is very obvious that there is a system behind it, there is a plan behind it, and we can see the growth from one FIFA window to another. I think they have amazing coach who has grown within the system and has a plan and know what she's doing. So it is very exciting also for us that is in the same confederation, in CONCACAF. It's exciting to have not just Canada being a rival, now Mexico is a big rival as well.
You mentioned Canada. We obviously have to bring up the semifinal at the Olympics. I'm sure that's on a lot of the minds of a lot of the players on your team. Just how big a rival are they, and what do you expect from Canada in this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, Canada has always been a rival, and it will, I feel like, always be a rival. Everybody is looking forward to play them, regardless whether it's an official tournament, a friendly game, or just a regular tournament. But I think that they're a tremendous squad, and ever since they started getting ready for the Olympics, we could see the change. We could see the improvements as well, and then showed in the Olympics that how good they are, and that they're capable of beating anyone at any point in time.
The tournament is obviously World Cup qualifying. It doubles as Olympic qualifying as well. We know there's only that one guaranteed spot at the next Olympics in this tournament. Of course, you want to be the boss of your confederation as well. You want to be the boss of your region. Is this tournament must win for you?
Every game is a must-win for us. It's not a question. We come out to play the games, obviously to grow through, whether it's a friendly game or official, to grow through and get better. But the one thing that never comes in question, but it's everybody knows, it is a must-win.
Mm. And as a tournament, you look at that and you say, okay, the expectation for this group is to win the tournament. Do you draw a line there between a successful tournament and a failure tournament at winning and losing, or can it be looked at bigger than that?
So, I mean, ever since when I got this job, one thing that I learned very early in the job, and no one has told me, no one has said anything, no one has put pressure on me in one way or another, is just the common sense and understanding that if we don't win, regardless of what we compete in, it's not good enough. So that's the standard that that I set up for myself, that every player sets up for himself. And that's just, like I said, it's a common sense that we go out and we have to win. That's it. Now, there's so many other things that we look at, and part of the success is the process that we go through. Part of the success is the change of generation. Part of success is discovering young players or preparing young players for the next World Cup, but also setting the base for what is going to be 2027 and furthermore.
All right, see, Sebi was going to be a part of this show. Now, how confident are you that this team will, and here's the key, dominate the qualifiers?
Dominate?
Dominate, yeah. Pasar caminando, we say in Spanish.
Yeah, a walk in the park, right? Yeah, I don't think that's... My comfort level would be them dominating. Now, we are seeing a trend. We saw it versus Colombia. We saw it in the She Believes Cup. There is some trouble generating opportunity, quality chances. There is some trouble putting them back to the net. I know that players like Alex Morgan, Sophia Smith, Mallory Pugh are red hot in the NWSL. Alex Morgan's leading the league. But we're still not seeing those chances being, one, generated, and two, end up in the back of the net. With this team, with this very young team, with Vlatko's new version of this team, now they're going to head into what should be hostile territory, right? They're going to be in Monterrey in front of probably 40,000 plus. Let's see how they react to it. Let's see how they do there. Now, Haiti and Jamaica are no walk in the park as well. They've got some quality players that could present tons of problems. Will they win? Yes, and you heard Vlatko. That's the they're expected to win. He almost said, he almost without saying it, was insulted by Seb's question of, you know, the expectations. That is the expectation to win. To dominate, I'm not so sure we're there yet.
They come to the tournament as the number one ranked team in FIFA ranking. So that says a lot, but the pressure of playing these qualifiers and the pressure of having this label that you have to dominate, it all starts with winning. It all starts with playing well, then winning. Then if you have the chance, you can also dominate. We'll talk about, of course, of the qualifiers in the next episodes of Football Americas. We had the chance to catch up with Madison Hammond from Angel City Football Club, with Riley Turner from UCLA Soccer at Nike's Title IX event last week. Nike also celebrating 50 years of heritage, supporting, helping younger women, girls, and they had some of their bigger athletes discussing how they have impacted with their careers, with their example, and leading change for their communities.
No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance.
I think if you look back at the last 50 years of what Title IX has done, it has provided women with a lot of autonomy and agency to go and achieve things. You know, you can, and not only in sport, if you want to be a C-suite executive, you can go do that. If you want to be the boss, you can do that. If you want to just have big dreams, you can do that. And I think when we look forward to the next 50 years, it's like, okay, then how do we diversify those voices? How do we make sure that it's not just one voice that's being heard, one type of athlete, one type of experience, but being able to give access to girls of color, non-binary athletes, and kind of propelling their stories through sport, because at the end of the day, we're athletes, we're competitors, and at the end of the day, the job is about winning. But is there a way to make that space available for all types of voices?
It's 50 years of Title IX, 50 years of Nike as well. How do you think sports have impacted all along the way the fight for equality?
I think, you know, we've come so far, but we've also just gotten started. Mm-hmm. We see NIL as an opportunity for men and women to make money, to have a voice in college, but we also see businesses like Nike pushing for women's voices in sports and uplifting women and giving them an opportunity to tell their story.
What can you tell me about the need for having more female coaches, both at college level and now especially at the pro level?
So I have had two female coaches in the NWSL, and I think their experiences and ability to relate to their players is so different than a male perspective, because there is a level of relatability, you know, for a woman who's had a past in sports and understands sports, understands what it's like to be in that position of that player. It just, I think, would bring out even more in elite athletes at all levels.
Speaking of impact and athletes like yourself, this is a great event because you get to share your experience, right? Share your career. And at the same time, you see a lot of young girls that look up to you and want to be like you. Now, when you talk about the impact that coaches had on you, how can you use that to now yourself make an impact on the younger generation?
So for my personal journey, I was just out here trying to, you know, earn a professional contract, and as soon as I signed one, it was, oh, you're actually the first Native American to play in the NWSL. And at the time, I saw it as a lot of pressure and responsibility, and now I see it as that opportunity, you know, to be that role model and create that level of relatability with not only young girls, but all young kids to, you know, see that if you're not in a space, that's okay, and you can enter it and then bring people along behind you. So I think the message that I try to send is, you know, to continue to work hard, but it's okay to be one of one. Hopefully I'm not one of one forever, but kind of having that opportunity allows you to show others that it's okay to enter a space that you have not been in before.
Who do you look up to? When was it when you said, I want to be not only an athlete, but I want to be someone that also is a part of a change for younger generations?
Well, I think that just ties back to role models. Me growing up, I see Serena Williams, I see Flo Jo, I see Breonna Scurry, and all of those trailblazers before me are the reason why I'm here today, and I might be the reason why a little girl pursues her dreams. And I think that, you know, when it comes full circle, you think, yeah, great things are happening for women right now, but you have to look into the past and say, well, why am I here today?
Great to see companies and athletes coming together. The future of the sport is also part of the future of society, right?
It is, you know, and I look at this maybe in my own selfish way. I'm a father of a four-year-old little girl, and that rings so true, you know, the need for role models, positive role models. And I don't know, the first thing about being a positive role model to a little girl, you know, I could only show her, and I mean this in the best possible way, I could only show her good positive role models in terms of her sporting figures or idols, if we want to go down that road. So things like this are vital.
And in the case of Riley, she's Nike's first NIL athlete. And as a part of her deal, she also gets to choose a community where she can make a difference as part of this deal, which I believe is a great job. So it was great catching up with them. Great event, and great to be a part of it. Let's move on. Big, big trade. Sydney Leroux is coming to L.A. The trade actually was officialized with Orlando. Orlando will receive a first round pick in 2024 and $75,000 in allocation money plus incentives. What does this mean for Sydney Leroux and Angel City Football Club?
Well, Sydney Leroux, it's a chance of getting back, and I don't want to say limelight, but getting a chance to play in a team where she's going to be valued in here in sunny Los Angeles, California, and back maybe on that national team picture. But this is crazy.
Yeah.
Look at the Orlando Pride recent notable departures. Forget about the players for a second. You look at the players who have left. There's been a suspended leave right now, indefinite suspended leave for a few of the coaches from some abuse accusations, if you will. Something's going on in Orlando. We don't know what it is, but something is going on in Orlando because this is nuts.
It's a lot of players, but it's also the names. It's great players that are no longer part of Orlando Pride. Something happened in Guadalajara also today that it's bad, sad, really sad news. Guadalajara Chivas confirmed that JJ Macias is out for the season. The season starts on Friday, and JJ Macias ruptured ACL on Thursday during training session, likely to miss 8 to 9 months. We both spoke on how we thought this was gonna be make or break season for JJ Macias. Very sad news.
Especially because there's no clear nine in the horizon, right? No clear nine in the horizon when it comes to the Mexican national team, excuse me. And this is a player who's only 22 years of age. And when you look at the previous years, I'm talking about the last 3 years, last year wasn't a very productive year for him. He still has over 30 goals in those 3 years. Now, people, that's a good amount of goals for a Mexican forward in Liga MX. It's a good amount of goals for a Mexican forward playing anywhere. He could have been in that conversation, in that topic of maybe possibly being with the Mexican national team.
Now, he had bad luck in Spain. He barely played, comes back to Chivas. Not great start, not really scoring. So, specifically for Chivas, is this something, nothing, or everything? Because people are saying, well, he wasn't really being a factor since he came back.
It's everything because he wasn't being a factor when he came back, and Chivas also didn't do anything when he came back. So you're banking on him being healthy and on Chivas doing something. Now, Chivas is better when they played with an actual nine. They didn't with Michel Leaño. They do with Cadena, and it looked the difference. We've called a few of their games in preseason, and he looked the part. He looked fit. Yeah. He looked hungry. He was scoring goals. I had banked on him being my surprise of the season. I thought he would have a very good season. This is very unfortunate for the player, very unfortunate for the club.
Options at number nine, Angel Saldívar, who most likely will be the starter, yeah. El Ingeniero, El Chevy. Sorry, but we all call Chivas players by their nicknames. I just love their nicknames. Angel Saldívar, Chevy Martinez, or Paolo Irizar. Paolo Irizar was signed last season for Tapatío, which is the team
playing the affiliate team.
Expansion team, but now will be a part of the first team. He will make the roster. He was actually informed by Ricardo Peláez, who, by the way, also said Chivas is out of the Orbelín Pineda race. They don't want to have to do anything with Orbelín Pineda, and it's also a conversation.
Excuse me, that's like me saying I'm out of the Sofia Vergara race. I pull myself out, Sofia Vergara and
were
I...
Were you ever
in the exactly.
Race, right? All right, Liga MX starts this Friday, so we are ready to give you some bold predictions. Let's book it. All right, Herc, what's your bold prediction for the Apertura 2022 Liga MX?
So you know that I feel that Rayados of Monterrey has the most luxurious roster in all of Mexican football.
You said that before, yes.
Yes. Fracaso Rayados. That is my bold prediction. You've got players. Funes Mori, who right now is one of the leading nine candidates for the Mexican national team. All-time goal scorer for Rayados of Monterrey. But you just got Brian Aguirre, the Uruguayan from Necaxa.
Rodrigo Aguirre,
And you also have Germán Berterame, who's one of the better players in Liga MX. You just signed Joao Rojas. You have Maxi Mesa there. You have Celso Ortiz. You've got Joel Campbell.
Hey, Rodolfo Pizarro. Don't forget Rodolfo Pizarro. Don't sleep on Rodolfo Pizarro.
And yet, my bold prediction is they will play some of the worst football and it will be a fracaso.
Now, okay, I see the topic bar. I was going to ask you, what does fracaso mean this team?
This roster should get directly, they should be fighting for first, second place. They should get directly into Liguilla. They'll go into Liguilla, maybe repechaje or somewhere along the lines of in there, but it will by no means be aesthetic. It by no means be pleasing.
You want to hear my bold prediction?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Juan Ignacio Dineno. Puma's number nine will be the league's top scorer. He will win Liga MX Golden Boot in Apertura 2022. Do I have any facts to support this? Absolutely not.
Sammy Salazar made an appearance.
This is like a real possibility? Probably not. This is why this segment is called Bold Prediction. Now, hear me out. I don't necessarily believe that Pumas are going to do great during the season. But
we never do, right?
We never do. But they made some moves this offseason that were very, very interesting. They brought Del Prete, another striker. He's a forward. He's not necessarily a goal scorer. So he's going to team up with Juan Ignacio Dineno. They were able to outbeat Boca Juniors for Toto Salvio, who was a very, very good player at Benfica, Atlético de Madrid, was part of the Argentina team in the last World Cup in Russia.
Pumas outbid him.
Pumas outbid Boca Juniors. So that's got to mean something. And Toto Salvio will be the key here. I believe that tandem is going to work really well. And I see Juan Ignacio Dineno scoring 9 goals. That's probably going to be more than enough to win Liga MX Golden Boot.
You know that in the last, I want to say, 2 years, 4 seasons, he's not scored over 4 goals a season?
That's why it's a bold prediction.
All right.
That's exactly why that is a bold
Champions
prediction.
League goal scorer, though.
By the way, Football Americas will not be on your TV or computer on Monday. It's July 4th. Watch a lot of MLS action on Tuesday. We'll be back. And what a show do we have for Tuesday. Héctor Herrera and Giorgio Chiellini, and most likely Sebastián Salazar. The three of them will be on the show.
That's what we do, baby.
Yeah.
It's your favorite show. It's your favorite show, America's show. This is for you.
All right, that's it for us. Hercules, thank you for having me on your
Thanks
show.
Thanks for coming,
I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure.
Anytime,
bro. Anytime. We'll see you next time. Football Americas.